This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Combine continues out in Indianapolis, and but the big stuff, for at least for our purposes, is done. The teams have spoken, and Eric DeCosta and John Harbaugh spoke on Tuesday, and Eric, as usual, started to bemoan the way they're always tight against the cap. Even with the cap going up, they can only do certain things, and with that, I'll give the floor to Jason.
Ben, could you give me the Misfits, please?
I got something to say!
I'm inside.
We always strive to keep it real around here. So, in light of the latest round of grousing and grumbling about a salary cap that is completely malleable and flexible, and one in which, if you're willing to spend, you can manipulate in a bunch of different ways, I do find it quite interesting. Yet again, we're not even into the start of the new year yet. We are at a point in time where teams are messaging or have the opportunity to message to their fan bases about how committed they are, about how they're willing to go over the top and at least sell the idea that maybe they'll do some things differently this time around, or that they've learned from some past instances where they came up just short. Instead, Eric DeCosta is using it as an opportunity to tamp down expectations, to hide behind the salary cap, to let you know that his owner, who he loves so much, is really, really trying to win here. And boy, if it wasn't for this dastardly salary cap or some of these rules, well, we'd win every year because we're so damn committed. But hey, guys, we do great at finding $1 million free agents and be happy with that. We'll let all these other silly teams, the ones that win Super Bowls lately, go ahead and spend all that money on outside players. We don't need to do too much of that, and we already spend as much as we possibly could. That's what they try to tell you. Well, guess who was 27th in the NFL in actual dollars spent on payroll last year? Your Baltimore Ravens. That's 27th out of 32. I'm sorry, that's 2024. 27th out of 32. Last year, they were 13th. The Philadelphia Eagles. I'm sorry, I got that wrong. Start over. Yes, last year, the Baltimore Ravens were 27th in dollars spent on payroll. They project to be 13th this coming year. Maybe higher, maybe not, depending on who spends what and depending on what extensions they did. But in dollars spent on payroll last year, the Ravens were 27th. The Philadelphia Eagles, who I think they won it all. Remind me, am I wrong about that?
They won it all.
They spent $65 million more than Silent Steve Bisciotti last year. $65 million more. Yet you don't really hear them complaining and crying about the salary cap the way the Baltimore Ravens do. And I would just let you know that Eric DeCosta's boss, he was second in the NFL in spending in 2023. That was the year Lamar's money kicked in, and they paid him more than they would have had to 2 years ago.
Yeah,
if they just went ahead and did the right thing then.
And they gave Odell Beckham.
The Buffalo Bills did, and others.
And they gave Odell Beckham $17 million.
So they were second. In 2022, they were 21st. In 2021, they were 11th. In 2020, they were 16th. In 2019, they were 17th in spending. In 2018, they were dead last, 32nd. In 2017, they were 23rd. So Here's the reality about the Baltimore Ravens and Eric DaCosta. Okay? Since 2017, five times they've been in the bottom 20 in the NFL in spending, and once Lamar's get paid year, they've been in the top 10. Yet they have the temerity to cry about a salary cap and to cry about we're so smart for our own good and we've got all these first world problems. We can't pay everybody. No, you could. You choose not to. Last year, the Philadelphia Eagles had five players who made $21 million or more. The Ravens had two. Any wiggle room there? Couldn't have added somebody at the deadline?
They tried, Jason.
Yeah. Philadelphia Eagles had nine players make $15 million or more. The Ravens had three. So these are facts. If you don't believe me, just go to Spotrac.com. This is not funny money. This isn't proprietary stuff. Go to, what's the other one? Over the cap. It's all available. Don't get caught up in the shell game they want you to play, which is salary cap. Go click on payroll. Go click on cash spend and do the math yourself. We were having a similar discussion earlier in the week, and it came up. I think it was Gigi, and we started talking about different rankings, and Steve's is all in as everybody, and we're listening to DaCosta.
Yesterday.
So I did a little list of...
I gave you an assignment.
Yeah, we had the report card coming out of the grades or whatever, and the players love Steve.
They do.
You know, because the facility's great and all that.
They think he's committed to winning.
Well, these are the teams that I think have owners that are more committed to winning than Steve Bisciotti in terms of how they fasten their rosters, how they're willing to take on payroll, how quickly they are to extend their own players. Philadelphia Eagles, certainly more committed than the Baltimore Ravens. They spent $65 million than them last year.
Yeah, Howie's very aggressive.
Kansas City?
Yeah.
Does anybody want to argue that? Do you want to have that argument?
Is there an argument?
No. Buffalo Bills?
Who
went out and got Diggs? Who's been willing to make the commitment? We can argue whether they overpaid Von Miller. They went and did that at a time when these guys are playing around with Justin Houston.
To be fair, they got gutted last year.
They keep their own. Yeah. Go find me a year where they're 21st or lower five times out of 8 years in spending. You got your thing right there.
You got your thing, Bum.
You got your computer right there. San Francisco, they've kept a lot of people. They're going to pay Purdy. They gave Garoppolo a big-time contract. They outspend Steve Bisciotti pretty much every year. I don't like Jed York. I got a lot of issues with him. I think he's a little bit of a turd.
Wow.
But, like, they've spent money. They've gone for it there. Who went and got Chase Young and took that on at the deadline?
Yeah, the medical reject. Hey, Jed York's a billionaire, so by definition you don't like him.
Correct.
Yes. Just want to clarify.
Cleveland, we can say about how misguided he is. He spent $300 million or more like three straight years.
Like a moron, though. How many wins he got to show for it?
But was he going for it?
He's taking swings.
I don't know what he's going for.
Was he all in? Was he committed?
He should be committed.
Did they have Myles Garrett and still get Za'Darius Smith?
Are you saying there's a
world? Did they keep their own guys?
Time out. Are you saying there's a world where you think that Haslam's a more committed to winning owner than Steve Bisciotti?
I think we're living in that world.
I don't.
If Steve Bisciotti allowed his football people to spend like the Cleveland Browns, you don't think they might be having a parade around here instead of having press conferences where they try to say we don't ever need to change anything even though we don't win?
As I told you before, I would rather see them spend, and I do think what they say is BS. But the last 2 years in the playoffs, it wasn't Eric's fault that they lost in the playoffs. They beat themselves. So, like, there still could have been... They lost the plot against Kansas City, and they turned the ball over multiple times against Buffalo. If they play a clean game against Buffalo, they win them. They beat them
maybe
by two
if they
scores.
Maybe if they had better players, maybe if they had a true
they
closer.
They had Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews.
How many times did they turn the Chiefs over? How many times did they turn the Chiefs over? How many times did they turn the Bills over?
That year, they forced the most turnovers in football that year.
Yeah.
And didn't force
a
turnover.
So wait, you're telling me that Steve Bisciotti...
I'm telling you, I'm not taking Haslam over
Bisciotti. It's not taking him over him. It's... This is a ranking of commitment.
I think he should be committed. I'm not. I don't think he's committed like that. That with Haslam, I have trouble getting over that line.
Stan Kroenke's more committed.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
Ziggy Wolf in Minnesota to me is more committed. I can even argue Stephen Ross is more committed. Miami. I mean, He's routinely made guys highest paid players.
He did try to cheat to get Tom Brady.
He was willing to do that.
Yes.
They did the cheetah thing. I mean, the cheetah's washed up now. Yeah. He wasn't when they got him.
Yeah.
Should he have paid Tua that much? That's just football people to decide, but he's willing.
Yes.
They went through less of a struggle with Tua coming off all those concussions, spending the money, than these guys went with the greatest player in the freaking league.
So far, the only one I'll argue is Jimmy Haslam.
I think the guy in Washington is going to. I mean, I think
this is a big offseason.
Yeah,
I think that
he's got payroll flexibility.
I think he's got the chance, and I put Houston ahead of them. Houston paid a guy $12 million so that they could trade him, and then they made an amazing trade for him.
Yeah.
Nick Caserio's getting everything he wanted. Everybody I heard came on this radio station last year and said the Houston Texans won the offseason.
Yeah, but we
he's a bobo.
Yeah,
he's
a buffoon. Years laughing at that guy.
That's fine. Were they committed? If Steve went for it last year like they went for it, would we be talking about Mark Andrews dropping a ball? Or would they have smoked the Buffalo Bills anyway if they weren't 27th in the league in spending?
So give me the list again.
I'm going Philadelphia, Kansas City, Buffalo, Houston, Green Bay, San Francisco, Rams, Minnesota, and Miami for sure. I would say Cleveland, and I think Washington is on that trajectory. So this guy, like I said, maybe barely in the top 10, right? Because he was like the fifth or sixth highest graded owner.
Yeah, players
and
love
I'm
him.
Like, I'd probably put him between 10 and 12.
Yeah.
And then I went and did the exercise.
Yeah, but,
and that's exactly where I feel.
But yeah,
and if he was a top five most committed owner, if he gave Howie Roseman, or he gave Eric DaCosta the kind of runway that Howie Roseman gets to spend, if he could have spent $60 million more last year, you think maybe they play at least one more football game? And what's that worth? At a time when you're getting $600 million from the government?
Yeah. From taxpayers.
You tell me if he's
from
a top 10 owner. You tell me if he's a top 10 owner.
They did give 20, Jason.
Yeah, they flexed on it, too.
To get another 55.
Bone, they flexed on it.
They did.
Yeah, they
which was an interesting.
Yeah, interesting flex.
Yeah, they took a victory lap on their
that's
blog.
Why I said they flexed on it,
and the state's at a $3 billion deficit.
Yeah, Wes Moore's got to cut his education budget, but look what we just did.
That was an interesting.
That was a fun exercise. And for most of them, I'm with you, Jason. I can't get over the Jimmy Haslam Mountain, but I'm with you for the most part. I can't get over the Jimmy Haslam Mountain. Coming up next, you mentioned Howie Roseman. How about we hear from Howie? He spoke at the Combine earlier this week, talks about the salary cap, his roster, extensions, and Myles Garrett. We hear from Howie Roseman next here.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Fan.
Yeah, I figured. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about anyone under contract with another team. I think that, you know, one thing that I can promise our fans is that there will not be a player that's available that we won't study, that we won't look at and see if it can help the team. Sometimes those opportunities work and you're able to do that, and sometimes they don't.
That was Howie Roseman. He was asked a question about Myles Garrett. Now, this becomes even more interesting because Mary Kay Cabot covers the Browns. Says that Myles Garrett told the Browns today he's not open to a contract extension with the Browns. Tells him he insists on being traded, so we're at a stalemate there. And Howie was asked about Myles Garrett.
Yeah, and Myles Garrett hasn't been granted permission. It's not like Stafford where he's been told, go find out what you can do. We will get to that point. It's just a matter of the Browns reconciling reality with the fantasy land that they have in their head. I just think it's interesting. I listened to a lot of what Howie Roseman said about the podium, and there are times where he does bring up some of the economic realities. But I feel like if you listen to him and you listen to DaCosta, one guy is trying to low-end manage expectations and make you grateful for every crumb you get. And another guy is saying, well, the world is full of opportunities and possibilities, and we do explore them as much as everybody. And we can't do everything, but we consider everything, and we take a fair number of big swings around here. And when you have the ability to outspend people, because again, the salary cap is fake. There is no set limit on how much you could spend on your payroll in any given year. And there are teams that will go as much as $100 million over the cap or damn close to it in certain given years. And it doesn't all mean that they tear their roster down the next year. That's reality. They want to sell you boogeyman. But I just feel like around here, it's more about the boogeyman than it is about sort of the wonderful wizard who could flick a switch, do things differently. And imagine what life would be like if we had $70 million this year to spend on payroll, more than we had the year before. That reality exists for some GMs. It does not appear to for the one in this town. So he kisses the guy's butt in a bunch of different ways.
Well, I think ultimately it's just two vastly different philosophies. And that philosophy, quite frankly, predated Eric DaCosta in the fact that this team never wheels and deals during free agency. Do they take the occasional big swing? Absolutely. But they cling to draft picks. They cling
cheap labor.
They cling to comp picks. They cling to building, developing through their own. I think part of it is just different philosophies. Now, well, does that mean that
the
they
draft
should,
picks are cost control?
Yeah. And does that mean that they need to adjust? Absolutely. And that's where I said, because you don't have all of the crazy high impact impending free agents, this would be the offseason to kind of buck a trend. You have 11 projected picks, and that's prior to a potential Mark Andrews trade. You can be more aggressive this offseason. I'm not saying go crazy, but you can be more aggressive.
Again, the Orioles got hammered for years for this, and that's fine. But we can go back to 2017, and there's one time 1 year, Lamar's get paid year, when the Baltimore Ravens were a top 10 spending team. They've tried it one time in the last 8 years. Imagine if they did two or three times. Maybe we're not talking about a turnover here or a turnover there.
Let's hear more from Howie Roseman, and here he is talking about how he handles the salary cap.
Everything really is player dependent. You know, when we talk about situations, it depends on the quality of play of the player, the person that we're talking about. And so you don't want to make any exceptions. Obviously, you have to have a vision of how you want your team to look. In the salary cap era, you have a certain number of resources that you can allocate, whether it's money or draft picks. And so whenever you do something, you're taking it from somewhere else. I mean, there's no way at the stage we are with our team that we can do something major without it coming from somewhere else. So we have to make all those decisions. But I think to kind of put us in a box and say, hey, we're not going to play, and I'm not saying that you're saying that we're, you know, we're not going to pay because historically we haven't done that. I mean, part of what we do is evolve and look at things and see how things are affecting our team, how things are affecting the league, and seeing our place in that.
So he did acknowledge that sometimes you have to rob Peter to pay Paul, and there is a credit card bill that is due, but it doesn't change their philosophy.
They spent $268 million on players last year. Bisciotti spent $203. That's
$60 million difference.
65. You can slice it any way you want. One person spent more than Howie and Jeffrey last year, and that's my man Jimmy Haslam in Cleveland.
Yeah. He spends.
He spends. Maybe not wisely, but he spends.
Yeah. More from
Buffalo Bills in their down year that you guys were talking about, by the way, still spent over $20 million more than Steve Bisciotti. That was in their get right year.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And now they got there. Now it's going to be a bounce back for the Bills.
We'll see.
At least that's the word.
We'll see.
Howie Roseman talks about roster construction.
Well, I could talk about this team. You know, not going back to 2017, we have a lot of guys who I think are in the prime of their careers under long term contracts. Not saying that team didn't. Who are kind of in this 26, 27, 28 year-old range. Really, we have to do whatever we can to make sure that we keep this window open for as long as possible. The most important season is this one coming up, 2025, and doing whatever we can to maximize that. But we have to get creative to make sure that we're keeping as many of our good players as we can. I sat up here last year and I said that's going to include playing young players. And I think that's going to be a huge part of what we are going forward, because we're fortunate enough to have a lot of good players who are making a lot of money.
There are machinations in place, but they're willing to be aggressive to jump through hoops to make the team and to stay aggressive and pay his players.
There's a lot of people out there who think they're going to land Myles Garrett, smart people who run football teams. Or if not Myles Garrett, one of these other elite pass rushers. The Baltimore Ravens are going out of their way to tell you, we don't do that.
I don't think that the Browns would trade him in the division, though.
Okay. Max Crosby or
Crosby, like, sure. It's different conversation.
Everybody's different got a price. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm for it.
I'll take
it's not happening. You're not hearing about it because it's not gonna happen. They're not gonna pay a guy. They're not paying another guy that much money. There's no bargain on Max Crosby. You would be paying a premium and you'd be adding to an existing contract. They don't do that.
No, they don't. They do not.
Now, Calais Campbell at age 32, they'll trade for him.
Trade for Anquan Boldin.
At age
30-something.
Yeah. They did Roquan, made him highest paid ever.
They did do that, and he was young.
They did do that.
He was young.
And they did it, in a year where they weren't paying anybody.
But they still did it.
They did it.
But top money for an inside linebacker is nothing like top money for a pass rusher.
It is not. Definitely not. Hey, we will come back. We talk a lot about Maryland basketball, but Towson has a big game tonight against William & Mary. They have clinched the top seed in the CAA. You know, JLC's all over that, JLCAA. Pat Scarry, the head coach of the Towson Tigers, joins us next here on The Fan. Inside Access here on a Thursday, and the Towson Tigers have a big game tonight. They host William & Mary at 7 o'clock. And joining us now to talk about the head coach of Towson Tigers, Pat Scarry. And, Coach, thank you, as always, for joining us. We appreciate your time. So let's start here. You guys clinched the one seed in the conference. How important was that to you?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, it's only the second time we've won a CAA championship in school history. We were able to do it, you know, whatever, 3 years ago. And, you know, look, you're ultimately judged at, you know, what happens in the conference tournament. But it's a lot harder to be the best team for 4 months than it is for 3-4 days. So I'm proud of our guys. You know, we struggled early in the non-conference, and we've just played very well in league.
So how do you handle this final weekend, right? Obviously, you're facing William and Mary. They're still sort of scrapping for a position in the tournament. You got Hampton, who you close with, who looked like a totally different team to me the last 3 weeks than earlier in the season. Do you still go all out? Do you manage minutes? How do you kind of play it here, Coach?
Yeah, honestly, no. This is a Super Bowl opportunity tonight. You know, we get a chance to play a really good William and Mary team. And, you know, gives us a chance to get to 20 wins for the fourth straight year. That's never happened here. You know, chance to win the league outright. Told our guys the best conference record, I think, is all time is 16-2. So in position to still compete for that. And we've got to get better, right? And I think our guys, I mean, I know the stuff, you know, rest guys, all that stuff. This isn't the NBA. You know, we don't play 82 games. And, you know, they get to put on the costume 31 times a year and then only guaranteed one in the postseason. So our guys want to play. The problem is William Mary's good, so we got to play well.
Coach, you mentioned the slow start in the non-conference, and you guys had a 6-game losing streak prior to winning 15 of your last 17 games. That includes a 12-game winning streak in the middle of that. And it's cliche, but some coaches say you learn more from losses than you learn from wins. What did you learn about your team during that 6-game losing streak before you went on this run?
Yeah, it was a lot going on. You know, bad coaching. We didn't play great. Tough teams. We had a lot of injuries, and the flu ran through us. We really didn't practice much. And then I think, you know, we were able to stop practicing again. And, you know, we've got really good guys. We've got experience, and we've got some talent. And we needed a little bit of belief. And we kind of stole a game to start the conference down at Wilmington, who's a terrific team. And I think that kind of helped get us going.
Well, Tim referenced the 12-game winning streak, and that's pretty obviously super impressive, and nothing lasts forever. You lose one at Elon. Is there a part of you, as a coach looking big picture, that's like, maybe it is for the best? We don't go into the conference tournament on this magic carpet ride where all we've done is win. Those two guards, the Simpkins brothers, kind of going off like they did, as well as you guys played defense. I'm sure that was maybe a shock to the system. Could you have used that learning lesson in the big picture?
I'll tell you next weekend. You know, we didn't, you know, we weren't happy about it. We just, you know, we didn't play great. A lot of that had to do with Elon. We were up with 3 minutes to go, and normally we've closed those games. You know, I think sometimes it's as coaches or fans, right? It's a little bit disingenuous to not give credit to the other team. You know, they had a good game plan. They made some plays. They got good players. But, you know, did we learn anything? I mean, I liked how we bounced back, you know, but I we'd rather keep winning, you know. I think our guys felt that way too. But, it's you know, it's not that easy to do when you're playing good teams. And you see it all over the country, right? Road games are hard to get. I mean, look at that game last night, Michigan State stealing that thing, right? I mean, it's just it's tough to get those. We're 7-2 on the road in conference. And, you know, that says a lot about the toughness of our group.
We're speaking to Towson men's basketball head coach Pat Scarry. It's Inside Access on the Fan. Coach, we know that your team's calling card is defense, but Dylan Williamson, he's shooting over 40% from three. He's got 11 straight games of double-digit scoring. What have you seen from him in this stretch?
Well, he puts the work in. He's talented, he's confident, and he's really developed a good all-around floor game. I told him this a couple days ago. I watched a couple of games from last year as we're playing these opponents, and I just amazed how much better a shooter he is. You know, and you want guys like him that put in the work to trust their work and not be afraid to take big shots.
Well, Coach, that young man wasn't even in some of your starting fives. Some of the games I went to earlier in the year, you have a lot of interchangeable parts. How fun is it for you to coach this team and the different ways you can match up? And again, the kind of team defense you play, the fact you don't turn the ball over much, like, you've got some fundamental hallmarks there. But it seems to me you've got some interesting pieces you can play around with based on the opponent and situation.
Yeah, we've got 10 guys, and we can play them all. A couple of them I'm not playing enough, but they've been good soldiers. Dylan, it was just like a 4 or 5-game stretch. I brought him off the bench because he didn't play great. I don't know if that was good coaching. I just was trying to get him going, and he responded. I do think guys like Tark, who's played at an all-league level, he's accepted coming off the bench and is a, you know, easy choice of sixth man of the year. Him and guys like Lowry, those guys have you know, really accepted for the good of the group. And you know, you don't take that for granted in this day and age, right? Guys have been all about winning. And we try to preach that. You know, when you win, everybody gains. But you know, sometimes that's easier said than actually getting guys to buy into it.
Coach, the first time I became aware of Tyler Tejada, I think I asked our friend Coach Patsos a question about maybe economic relations with Western Europe, and somehow Tyler Tejada's name came up by the end of it, because you know as well as we do that Jimmy sort of moves in and out about topics. But alas, he came on our radar. Man, that kid can play. For people that aren't aware of him, tell the people about what Tyler Tejada's given you.
Yeah, first, you're right. Jimmy's like a balloon, right? You let it go, you don't know where it's going. But it's all good. Yeah, look, Tyler's gifted. He's 6'9", and he can really put the ball in the basket, and he lives it. You know, he comes from a great family, especially his mom, Jennifer, and they've allowed us to coach him, but this guy puts in the work. I mean, he's cut his body fat in half. He's really improved defensively. He studies film. You know, he works like a guy that wants to make a living playing basketball, and I believe he's got an opportunity to do that for a long time.
Coach, a lot of us follow sort of the bigger conferences, right? And you're used to, oh, are they going to get 8 bids, 10 bids, 11 bids, whatever. And you kind of alluded to this earlier, but the fact that you guys have put together a historic season and it's all going to come down to a couple nights in Washington, D.C. a week from now. And you've been living that life for a long time, and so have some of these young men. But, like, what is that sort of like where you know that, like, the margins are incredibly slim, and as good as this conference is and as many teams that I watch in the CAA that I'm like, they could beat the 8th or 10th best team in the Big Ten on a neutral site court. It's only going to be one.
Yeah, it's, you know, look at the you know, the game is rigged, right, a little bit. I mean, if you look at the top of our league, if we were given the opportunities to play some of those teams, we'd beat them. The reason we're not given those opportunities is those teams are pretty smart, too, so yes, they're not going to play us. But, you know, the flip side is that's where March Madness starts, right? And that's what we all signed up for. You know, like I said initially, it's harder to be the best team for 4 months than it is for 3-4 days. But I understand what you're judged by. You know, it's also, though, you know, tell our group we're going to put everything we can into it and to win the regular season title. And after that, we're going to try to put a game plan together and hopefully have great success in Washington, D.C. Sometimes you'll argue with a buddy or something like that. And, you know, it's great when some team has won 8 games and then they win 4 games in 4 days, right? And everyone talks about it. But I would assume the people I work for and the university I represent don't want us to win 8 games every year and then just win 3 games. The goal is to win every game on the schedule, right? Yeah. And win a league title, win a conference tournament title, and try to keep it going from there. So that's all we can really control. I have great belief and confidence in this group, but I think our group also really respects some of our opponents, and our league is back up. It's climbed 3 or 4 spots in KenPom this year, and there's been some coaching changes in our league, and those guys have quickly come in and made those programs more competitive. We're going to see 2 of them this week.
Yep.
Coach, before we let you go, you brought up the Maryland game last night. We were all there broadcasting from Maryland, kind of a gut punch loss for the Terps. As a coach, I was driving home thinking, well, this game could help them in March. That's easy for me to say. As a coach, are there positives to take away from that game if you're Maryland?
You know, Kevin Will is obviously a terrific coach. I'm sure when he goes back and watches film, there's a lot of things they probably like playing against the, you know, a potential Final Four team in Michigan State. But I think, like any of us, those are the losses you remember forever. I remember more of those than I do wins, the good wins I've had. Those things haunt you forever. But it's part of the deal when you sign up for it at this level. But they're having a heck of a year, and he's done a fabulous job down there.
Coach Pat Scarry, thank you. Tigers play tonight against William & Mary. As Aerosmith says, we'll continue to dream on and hopefully get this CAA tournament as well.
Appreciate you guys having me on. Go Tigers.
We'll be there. I'll be there with my little guy, Coach. We'll be rooting you on. Say hi to Doc for us.
Take care. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you. Hey, coming up next, we get back to the Terps. Gut punch loss last night against Michigan State. We'll ask the question, any positives you can take out of that game? That's next here on The Fan.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Two teams battling. We shot 31%. They shot 33%. It was a dogfight. And, you know, that's the second time in a row we've come off bye weeks and just haven't played overly well. So this is all on me.
That's Kevin Willard acknowledging that maybe he doesn't get these guys ready when they have extra time off. It was a rock fight last night. Great atmosphere. Kudos to the students. Kudos to everybody at the Xfinity Center last night. The atmosphere was incredible, but the Terps, they only scored 23 points in the first half, up 23-21. That's incredible in and of itself. They lose to Michigan State on a half-court heave, 58-55.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure lessons learned from this. I'm sure watching that video today as a team was probably pretty difficult. This is a club that had been playing at a truly elite clip, efficiently, offensively, and when they really needed to, in games defensively. And they just never really looked comfortable in their own skin in this one. It was Izzo's kind of a ball game from start to finish. The extra time off, did it factor, didn't it? I mean, okay. They shot 29% from the floor in the first half, and they shot 35% in the second half. So, I mean, it improved, but it was still a problem. No one outside of Rodney Rice really distinguished themselves. The environment was unbelievable, a crazy atmosphere. You could literally feel the ground shaking under your feet, sitting on the floor. But it's not like it had these guys playing anything close to a B game, let alone an A game. They fought hard. They showed guts. They were tenacious. They didn't play their smartest ball game. Jacoby Gillespie couldn't get anything going from the floor. They turned it over more than they would like. Not that 11 is an egregious number, but some critical turnovers. They just never got in any sort of offensive flow or rhythm. They were beat up bad on the offensive glass. They were beat up in the paint. And they were just kind of... I mean, they never took this game by the throat. They never... There was no stretch of that game where you're like, they're the more talented team, which they were, and it's showing. It just never really manifested.
Played
itself.
Michigan State style. They're like, styles make fights. We talked about it before the game at the Maryland Club yesterday, Jason. Whose style is going to win out? Maryland likes to get up and down. Michigan State likes to muck it up. Well, they mucked it up.
Yeah, and Maryland had 5 fast break points. They could never get out in transition, and you have to credit Michigan State for their transition defense as well. But it was a poor night for the offense to have their worst game of the season, because that was their lowest scoring output of the season, 55 points. And outside of Rodney Rice's second half, none of the starting five really distinguished themselves. It looked like Derek Queen was too amped up for this game. We heard Kevin Willard pretty much say as much. And Julian Reese, he never got anything going inside.
I think Gillespie, the physicality bothered both of them.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. And Jacoby Gillespie, he was off all night. You credit him for hitting some free throws late in that game, but he was off all night. Miguel picked up fouls early. It was just all out of sorts.
Well, and how many times was the shot clock down to 7 seconds or less in the half-court offense and nothing had materialized yet? You know, like...
There's one thing where they score on the run and they get the transition threes and they get the long outlet passes, one pass, and it's a wide open wing three. There's that element that you thought might not be there because of the way Izzo's team played. But then there's just the other element of guys moving quickly and decisively off the ball, and it's one pass, two pass, and somebody's trying a backdoor, or somebody at least is cutting towards the hoop, and maybe you pick up a foul, or there just was none. There was none of that. There was no semblance of offensive flow or rhythm. And when they did make their late run, it was because they started doing some of that. Not that it was showing up from the floor. It was just getting them to the line.
Yeah.
Let's hear more from Kevin Willard. And we talked earlier about Jacoby Gillespie and that last shot. And did he shoot it too soon? Like, was he paying attention to the clock? Well, Willard was asked about the shot selection.
You always want to make sure you get the last shot. But again, that's something that, you know, he came down, pushed it. You know, maybe if he waits, he doesn't get an open look. You know, and I trust Kobe. He's been great all year. At the end of the day, kid still had to hit a 60-footer to beat you. So, yes, do you want him to take the last shot? Absolutely. But it's not like he took it at 6 seconds and Hollerman was able to dribble up and get a layup. So would I have liked him to wait one more second? Sure. A kid still had to hit a 60-footer to beat us.
So, yeah, there are a couple things at play here. Number one, you probably want to wait another second because if he misses and he doesn't miss it as badly as he does, you might have a shot at a tip-in. But taking it with 4.8 seconds left gave the perfect storm opportunity to Michigan State to throw up the heave, and it went in.
Well, we're sitting under the goal that he's racing towards, and we could see the whole thing sort of literally coming at us. And from the moment he retrieved the ball in the corner, he looks sped up to me from the giddy up. Like, I'm sitting there saying, like, I don't think he realizes how much time he has. And he kind of, it looked like a one cut and run running back where he almost had tunnel vision. You could see him sprinting right towards us. It looked like he was sprinting to his shot, a spot to pull up from that spot and shoot. Like, he almost sort of had made up his mind from the moment he got that loose ball. It looked to me like a guy who thought he had five or six seconds to make all this happen and not closer to 11. The inner clock looked off from the getty up, from the get up, and it kind of was. And not that he took the worst shot in the world by any stretch of the imagination, and not that it didn't look like it had a real chance to go in, but he was a little manic, a little hyper.
Yeah.
And even just another second or two to pick your head up and see if there was anything else available may have helped.
Or drive.
In the end, I still feel like they were kind of lucky to even get that opportunity.
But they got there.
They got there. But
not only did they tie it up, Jason, but they had the ball. Like, they were able to create that opportunity. That's, sometimes that happens.
They hung around. They gave themselves a chance. But I don't think they were the smarter team. I don't think they ever really made Michigan State uncomfortable. The crowd at times made Michigan State uncomfortable. But I didn't feel like Maryland's press got to them that much. An instance here or there. I just don't think this team is going to win a whole lot of ball games when one guy makes more than three shots from the field.
I will echo that sentiment. You can't win basketball games if nobody.
This team certainly can.
No. They play Penn State on Saturday. That's a noon tip. Pregame coverage starts at 11 right here on 105.7 The Fan. But we switch to baseball next. What does Tim Kirchen think of the Baltimore Orioles heading into this season? Covers the MLB for ESPN, and he joins us next.